sources that relayed to me that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not pleased with the Bucks' decision to buy out Damian Lillard for the remainder of his contract. And he just didn't like how it was handled. And so, you know, Giannis, this whole offseason, since the season ended, he's been, you know, weighing his options and trying to figure out what he is going to do, trying to navigate his future. And, you know, this is just one more thing added to the equation in which he's seeing that there are some, you know, suspect things happening, or the way that they are happening. And so I was told that he is not pleased with what transpired with Damian Lillard.
Hour two, Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Mego in for Keefe today. And a reminder, you can stream WEEI anytime on the Odyssey app, as well as the iHeartRadio and TuneIn apps. Lots of ways to listen to Jones and Keefe each and every day here on WEEI. That was Chris Haynes. We mentioned that yesterday. Wide open Eastern Conference, it seems. I think that's damage control from Giannis and his camp to a friendly media member to let you know that he wasn't the guy stabbing Damian Lillard in the back on the way out the door. I can't imagine the Bucks, and I know what Chris Haynes said there, and it wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong again. But I can't imagine the Bucks, knowing the situation they're in with Giannis, going, hey, we're going to waive Damian Lillard, we're going to bring in Miles Turner, and Giannis is going to know nothing about it. Like, I can't bring myself to believe that.
Especially because there hasn't been more that's come out. Like, if Giannis was really upset about this, if he was really left in the dark, wouldn't there be more than just one report out there? I know Chris Haynes is really close to Giannis and close to Dame Lillard, but wouldn't there be a little bit more? Like, if they did something where he was completely out of the loop, and it was enough that he was, or when he was on the fence about asking for a trade, I just think that there would be a little something else there.
Yeah, and it ties in with the Celtics as well, because they have interest, they've shown interest, quote unquote, according to The Athletic, in Damian Lillard. I would be out on the signing. Who knows what he's going to have left in the tank, too? Like, I've said before, Tatum's not going to be the same player when he comes back from the Achilles injury. Now, that doesn't mean he'll be a bad player. That doesn't mean he can't play.
I don't really like hearing that from you.
Okay, but for a guy who was a perennial first-team All-NBA player, I bet he never makes first-team again. He was never a true MVP candidate. He'll never win an MVP. That doesn't mean he can't be All-NBA and make All-Star teams. He can do those things. But, and that's in a best-case scenario, by the way, I think. He's an approximation of the same player, but he'll never be the same player. Lillard may never be able to play again. Like, you look at some of the guys who had these Achilles injuries. DeMarcus Cousins was a big, and it fell off a cliff. I'm trying to remember some of the guards. We went through all these at the time.
Yeah.
Like, a guard in their 30s off an Achilles injury, they're probably cooked.
Well, wasn't Dominique All-NBA first-team again?
So he, no, I don't believe he ever made the same level post-injury. And he was gone in Atlanta and started bouncing around after that. And so, I mean, he eventually was here. Like, his career ended pretty quickly. He came back from the injury in less than a year and played at a high level, though. That's true. But no, I don't believe he ever achieved what he had pre-injury. I don't think. When we went through all these before. Yeah, if you could. So if Dominique is the one exception to the rule, then show it to me. But most players never were the same player again. But I would expect Tatum to come back. He's young enough.
He was All-NBA second team that year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Tatum might be.
The year he came back from his Achilles injury, he was All-NBA second team.
But this is what I'm telling you. If Tatum was a top five player.
It was like, also in the early 90s.
Durant's another great example. Like, Durant, I don't think, has ever made a first team again after his Achilles injury. He's been second team. He's made a million All-Star teams. He's come back and largely been the same player, but he was an MVP candidate before. So if Tatum was a top five player, he's now going to be a top 10 or 15 player. That doesn't make him bad.
The huge outlier with Tatum is the age. And so it'll be, in a morbid way, it'll be interesting to see both him and Tyrese Halliburton. You'll get a little more idea of if this is something we're going to continue to see from more NBA players, where they're having these bizarre Achilles tears in their mid-20s in truly their prime. Like, is it going to be a different situation for Achilles injuries?
We were talking about this off the air. The idea, and this is a couple of days ago, there was a study that was put out, was it the University of Delaware?
Yes.
About all the Achilles injuries that have popped up in the NBA. And basically, the way I read it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way I read it was they've perfected a way to make athletes more explosive by working their upper legs, quads. But now they're, you would hear this all the time. You don't want to, you can't just work out your biceps. You don't want to turn into a crab person. You need balance, right?
Right. Everything's connected to everything.
And so basically the lower legs, they're not working the same way that they're training their upper legs. You don't buy that?
As a Maryland person.
That was part of the study.
See, this is coming from Delaware. I don't know. It's like, if we knew that, could we have, is this just been discovered? Could you have figured this out before the NBA playoffs?
Well, there wasn't a rash of these injuries.
Yeah. That's what I'm wondering. Like, I would have to know a little bit about how long that study went on. If that's the reason, then it would be great to have one thing to point at and say the way that you're training these athletes is almost directly leading to these injuries. It just is hardly ever that way. I mean, they're still trying to figure out why some people tear their ACLs more than other people.
Tom in North Providence said it never happened to basketball players in the 80s and 90s. I mean,
not technically true,
but I agree. There's more present day than there were then. But Dominique would be an example of a player it happened to. They all wore high top sneakers. Today, they all wear tennis shoes.
To me, the easiest explanation is probably just the level of strenuous play that these guys have earlier in their careers. Like the amount of minutes from AAU on that they play.
Well, and Tatum and Halliburton played so much for Team USA. Oh, wait, they both sat the bench for Team USA.
Okay, but they both were they both had extreme minutes for prior seasons in the NBA.
Sure. A lot of guys play a lot of minutes in the NBA.
I don't know if anybody played as many minutes overall as Tatum when it comes to also an entire championship run.
Maybe not. I mean, I don't know.
I think in the past few years, Tatum has the most minutes total.
Yeah, Luka played a million minutes for Dallas on an NBA Finals run and then turned around and played.
Luka's Achilles. Luka's Achilles is made out of hamburgers. So he's a different situation completely.
I was telling you, that's a guy who plays a lot of minutes.
He's got Big Macs in both ankles. And that's a good thing. I'm not saying that disparagingly. That's a nice thing for him.
Yeah, he works out his upper and lower legs equally. He does not work them out. Text line 617-779-7937. Guys, would they have to take on the entire Lillard contract? No, they would not.
That's the point of taking
the Bucks waived him. They're stretching out that contract over 5 years, and so you still got to win a bidding war to get him. Like, if you're lined up against three other teams and you're offering the least amount of money, he probably won't take you. But you don't have to inherit the Bucks contract. No, that's not the case.
I think it would be nice though if they were like rehab buddies, Tatum and Lillard, and they would just, like, you know, maybe they'd like start a YouTube series together or something.
That would be a good thing to do. Another text here. Guys, if the Celtics sneak into the seventh or eighth seed, is it possible Tatum will be ready to go late next year? Are you banking on a Tatum return?
I really don't like that idea at all. I'd rather just give him the entire year. I know, and you know me, I get into mama bear mode. And I think that he already seems, if you follow him on Twitter, like, so frustrated by the process of how long this rehab is going to be anyway. He's going to be
had to rehab anything, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, well, I think he's going to be chomping at the bit to come back.
I would say welcome to how most
up
other
Jays. Yeah. And in a big way, it's going to be the responsibility of the Celtics organization to make sure that he's making the smartest move.
I would just say, I mean, to Tatum, I understand he's frustrated, but, like, welcome to how the rest of the professional athletes live. Like, you've been very fortunate you haven't had to rehab anything at age 27 or whatever he is. Like, he's been exceptionally fortunate he hasn't had to do that, and that probably speaks to
is that just luck or is that responsibility?
Well, I definitely think it's a blend. I mean, there's some luck
involved. Not everybody is born with hamburger Achilles.
That's true. But, like, okay, welcome to how everybody else has to live, Tatum, including a bunch of your teammates you've played with over the years. A lot of guys have to rehab injuries, so he has been fortunate in that way, but some of that is the shape he keeps him in and the training he does, et cetera. I'll acknowledge that. That segues into, and I'm with you, I would not rush Tatum back this year. It sounds like they're already punting on the year almost entirely. They're ready to dip a little
they
luxury tax.
They won't even begin talking about timelines, and I think that's fine. Like, look, as much as anybody else, I would love the idea of Tatum coming back and leading them back to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he looks mostly himself. Like, what a dream. I just don't really think that's reality. And when you look at the long term for a player who just started a Supermax deal, you just want him to get healthy, and however long that takes.
Yeah, I mean, I would not bring him back. If the team's playing well without him, I wouldn't bring him back for a playoff push anyways. Now, the seventh or eighth seed, maybe there's a more of a gray area in my mind where it's like, could Tatum really elevate the team? let's say they're the fourth seed on pace for 50 wins without him, I wouldn't screw with it. I'd let Jaylen keep leading the team.
I'd say get on that Durant timeline. You take all your time. Take all the time.
Yeah, and he, what did he end up missing? I mean, it was like
Durant had the longest one,
like 600
COVID.
Days, 700 days. Yeah, something like that.
So maybe not quite that long. I'm not wanting 2 years, but longer than, hey, let's get you back in
April.
No,
but an off season, a season, and then another off season, or you know, before he's actually playing in NBA games again, that would probably be the best way to get him back closest to what he was pre-injury, which, by the way, based on the track record with these guys, he's never going to be again.
Did you just stop saying that?
Well,
I don't like that.
Well, it's true.
You don't know. You don't know.
No, I don't. That's why I said based on the track record. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's the exception to the rule. But like even Durant, again, people champion Durant. And if he comes back the way Durant did, that's great. But Durant's never been the same guy. He's never been an MVP candidate, first team All-NBA guy again. He hasn't. So he went from being like the best or second best player in the league to still a top 10, 15 player in the league. Now more like a top 20 player in the league. I don't know where he'd rank. That's what I'm talking about with
Tatum. So if Tatum goes from being a top 3 to top 5 player to a top 10 player.
Yeah, it's still really good.
That's still remarkable.
But it's not the same.
Stop it. Stop saying that.
No, but acknowledge that that's true.
It's
if he goes from being the third player in the league to the 10th player.
Because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Okay. And I'm a little bit more optimistic than you. Maybe because I'm following on Instagram and he's out there in the Auerbach Center like every day. He's meeting the young guys yesterday, dapping them up.
He should be.
And he's showing, you know, that he's working out the rest of his body.
I'm with you. I would not him.
People are going into a holiday weekend, and you're just like throwing cold water on
everything. In fairness, I did this right when the injury started.
It's horrible. That was your reaction?
Well, yeah, I looked at the Achilles. It's not an ACL. It's an Achilles. It has a horrible track record. The injury, it's a terrible, terrible injury.
It is a terrible injury. Yeah. Thanks for bringing all this back up.
Okay, but that's what we're talking. We're talking about Tatum. That's a big factor in talking about Tatum, no?
The comeback is going to be greater than the setback, okay?
Well, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. So looking at the East, Mega,
What is it about my presence here that brings out this side of you?
I was doing this with Keefe. It's not just that. The East is, it feels wide open. You look around at what other teams have done. I guess I kind of like what the Bucks have done, assuming that the Giannis thing is a ruse. It's not just they've actually pissed off Giannis and now he's gone. Then they screwed up royally. But I kind of like what the Bucks have done. I don't know. Do you look at anybody else? I mean, Atlanta, I guess, has improved their team.
Yeah, I like the Hawks.
Okay. So
I think the Hawks have gotten significantly better.
Who else has reasonably gotten better? And who else?
Cavs.
Who else is to where? You think the Cavs got better?
You don't?
Not really. I mean, Darius Garland's going to miss time. They lost Ty Jerome. Who'd they bring in?
Where did Dorian Finney-Smith go?
Finney-Smith went to the Rockets, I thought.
Yeah, the Rockets are having the best one.
So they're having a great offseason. That's out West, though. Like, I'm not worried about the Western Conference teams, at least not right now. If they're in a position where they're worried about who they're facing in the NBA Finals, then they had themselves a great year. I'm focused on the East right now. I kind of like what the Bucks did. Orlando getting Desmond Bane is a good move, but I don't think that's like a game changer. Atlanta got a little better. I really don't think the rest of the East is appreciably better.
And Larry Nance Jr. I knew it was
That was the big ticket
move. That's who I wanted the Celtics to bring on if they're not going to go for Mo Wagner, and I don't think they are, but they can't afford any of these guys right now with what they're trying to do.
So look, Philly should be better. Terp mentioned this to me after the show. Philly should be better. Embiid might be overrated. I like Tyrese Maxey. No one really likes Paul George, but Philly's going to be a way better team than they were a year ago, assuming anything approaching health. I do think that Milwaukee's better. Indiana's way worse. No Halliburton. They lost Miles Turner. They're going to be way worse than the Celtics.
New York still doesn't have a coach.
New York doesn't have a coach, but I think
they're the number one seed right now?
Them or Cleveland, I think, are the two safest teams
to
look at.
You just said you didn't like Larry Nance Jr. to Cleveland.
No, I just said I didn't think they were better than a year ago, but they're probably still better than the Celtics. I'll give them that.
Overall,
they
won
64 games last year.
Overall, the East is certainly worse than it was the last 2 years, and not just because of where the Celtics are at.
So I still think the Celtics have a real shot to be in the mix in the East, and what that means is host a round to start the postseason, a top four seed. I still think they're right there in the mix for that. Now, if they keep peeling pieces off and they're below the luxury tax, I'll reset. If they don't have any solution in the front court, I'm still giving them the benefit of the doubt. They'll bring in somebody, not named Minot or Garza, in the front court. Let's see who that is. But you need someone representative in the front court. I still think they can be there. I know you feel differently, though.
I think that they're a little bit lower than that. I think being a four seed would be everything completely goes your way. Everybody stays healthy. Jaylen Brown plays close to his all NBA season. And I think that's a lot to ask for what the way that they're setting this up. I also think, like, I mean, it's just going to be, you're going to be having players, at least the where you stand right now, that don't exactly fit into what Missoula's play style has been. And so I wonder what the adjustment's going to be there. If you look at, for example, if you sit here today and Namias Keita is your starting center, Namias Keita doesn't shoot threes.
Nope.
Like, he simply doesn't shoot threes.
Yeah, good.
And that's the cornerstone of Missoula's offense. So, well, does that mean that Missoula's offense changes around Namias Keita, or do you ask him to change his playing style?
Well, no. I mean, I would hope for neither of those things. Like, I wouldn't change the offense because of Namias Keita, and I wouldn't ask him to start launching threes.
Do you like Namias Keita?
If he's in your rotation, fine. He probably shouldn't be starting. He shouldn't be starting. So, but they need to adjust how they play, right? And if some of that is forced because Tatum's on the sideline, and that's not just launching threes, Mego, but I would look at ceasing to start the offense with Tatum. And you're not going to be able to do that this year. I wouldn't have Jaylen Brown initiate the offense. Now, who does that is a fair question. You know, do I do more of that with Derek White? Could Simons do that? If Simons isn't here and Pritchard's in the starting lineup, could he do that? One thing I liked about Indiana and their offense, and Tyrese Halliburton and players of that ilk aren't easy to find, but the way the ball moved, the back cutting, you know, and then that trickles down to cutting into just spacing the floor and launching threes. The whole offense shouldn't be Tatum trying to draw a double team and kicking to an open shooter. Like, you need more to your offense than that. And this year is a way to experiment with that. And so I wouldn't change the offense because Keita can't shoot threes. I changed the offense because it didn't work last year. Tatum's not here, and it's a good opportunity to try to do something different that clearly wasn't working come playoff time last year.
I also think it'll be interesting when you get into the regular season with this team, because this is a team that for stretches didn't even run plays on offense. You know, they'd kind of run a set here or there. I think it's just by necessity going to have to be really different because you don't have the level of playmakers out there with Tatum out and now Drew gone and Porzingis gone, where you can say, hey, let's just kind of freelance here and see what happens. So I think the offense is going to look really different. And if you hated the offense of the last 2 years, which was hyper-productive, then maybe that's a good thing for you as a watcher.
Text line, 617-779-7937. I trust Brad Stevens. They're the best Boston team, or the best bet for a Boston team to get back to the playoffs. Not worried about them compared to the other Boston professional teams. I don't know why we needed that qualifier.
So I
think we're about to find out how good of a GM Brad really is. I'm not saying he's a bad one, but he hasn't been told no much, right, on any of these moves. Now, Derek White was a highly creative deal, way better player than I thought. You know, his ability to bring in Drew Holiday and add him to a championship-caliber team and some of the manipulation they had with the luxury tax and the aprons, great. But he wasn't told no a lot, you know? Wick was writing dad checks that his dad was ultimately going to cash or couldn't cash to the point where they had to sell the team. He wasn't told no a lot. Now it feels like there's more restrictions. I think we're going to find out a little bit more about Brad Stevens, because if he figures out a way to make creative moves to keep this team competitive without Tatum, Porzingis, Holiday, well, he's going to deserve all the credit he gets. If not, we might start looking at him a little bit differently this season. Is that fair to say?
I think so, especially when you think about the kind of coach that Stevens was. Coming from college into the situation that he was in with the Celtics in a rebuild, Stevens thrived on those pre-Kyrie teams, like getting those teams to punch above their weight class. So I wonder if that's going to translate in any way to his position in the front office now, if it's going to be like he thrives on the challenge, because you can be a GM basically anywhere when you're saying we're going for the championship. We already have the pieces in place. We have the foundation set. We just need to tweak here and there. And I'm not saying it was like easy to make the decisions that he made, but it was easier than the position he's in now. So, yeah, I do think that this is going to be a test for him. But maybe some of the character that we saw of him on the sidelines will translate to the front office.
Yeah, again, I don't mean to say that he's a bad GM by any means, but if you think he's the best or second best GM, him and Sam Presti, do we look at him as more like a top 10 GM? Do we look at him and question that more coming out of the year, because this is really the first time as an executive he's had limits and been told no. And I think we're going to find something out. 617-779-7937. You can weigh in here on Jones and Keefe. Mego in for Keefe again today. It is a Wednesday, which means we have some Would You Rathers on a Would You Rather Wednesday right after Trending with Billy Lanny.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending is brought to you by Northeastern Savings Bank. Last night's Red Sox game against the Reds was suspended due to rain. The game will resume today at 2:30 in the top of the fourth, where the Red Sox have a 2-1 lead. Brian Bay will be on the mound for the Sox. Pre-game coverage with Dan Ball begins at 1:30 right here on 93.7. The series will continue tonight. First pitch is at 7:10. You can hear the call of the game with Sean McDonough and Will Middlebrooks on 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Stomach at WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Nick Martinez will get the start for the Reds. The Reds at Red Sox have yet to announce who their starter will be. Don't forget to tune into the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil beginning at 6:10. According to Sham Sharania, the Boston Celtics have signed former Minnesota Timberwolves forward Josh Minot to a 2-year, $5 million contract. And forward Sean Corral is returning to the Bruins on a 2-year contract worth $3.7 million. Northeastern Savings Bank is the leading alternative to using a big bank for businesses and families in Massachusetts. Upgrade to a local partner. Upgrade to Northeastern Savings Bank. Member FDIC and DIF. I'm Billy Lanny. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.